Today's gospel lesson is from the Gospel of Mark, the 10th chapter, beginning with verse 46. They came to Jericho. As Jesus and his disciples and a large crowd were leaving Jericho, Bartimaeus, son of Timaeus, a blind beggar, was sitting along the roadside. When he heard that it was Jesus of Nazareth, he began to shout out and say, "Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me." Many sternly ordered him to be quiet, but he cried out even more loudly, "Son of David, have mercy on me." Jesus stood still and said, "Call him here." And they called the blind man, saying to him, "Take heart, get up, he's calling you." So, throwing off his cloak, he sprang up and came to Jesus. Then Jesus said to him, "What do you want me to do for you?" The blind man said to him, "My teacher, let me see again." Jesus said to him, "Go, your faith has made you well." Immediately he regained his sight and followed him on the way. This is the word of God. Thanks be to God. Will you pray with me? Open our eyes today, O God. Open our ears. Give us new hands for reaching out, new hearts for holding on to each other, and new life that we may live in your light. Amen. We might be tempted to think that if we're not blind, or if we're not in need of some specific healing, that this story is not for us. How blind we can be. Over and over again throughout the Gospel of Mark, Jesus uses words related to vision and sight. He says things like, "Look," and "Can you not see?" Over and over again, the metaphor of sight and blindness is used to describe our relationship with God. Recently, I've been reading a book that has a chapter in it about how blind we can be. The book is by Jacob Needleman. It's entitled Why We Can't Be Good. And he talks in this one chapter about a detailed analysis of what's called the Milgram experiments. Most of us have probably heard of these experiments. They were some psychological experiments that were done at Yale University back a long time ago in the 60s. Milgram was the psychologist who was interested, he was curious, after studying the Holocaust in Germany, curious about how to understand humans' willingness to hurt other people and how that could come about. So he did some experiments where there were two rooms, and there was a person in one room who was hooked up to a bunch of wires, and it looked like they were going to get electric shocks. And then a person in the other room who had the control panel for the electric shocks. And they actually paid people to come in and participate in the experiments. The thing is, no one ever was shocked at all, but there were actors who were acting like they were being shocked electronically. And the people who came in were told, "We're doing psychological experiments to see if pain will increase people's learning." So the people were told, these people who are hooked up to these electrons are going to have to memorize a sequence of words. And if they get it right, they don't get shocked. And if they get it wrong, you push this button and shock them. and then there was a dial to turn up the electric current. And as the experiment went along, you had to keep turning up the dial and giving him more and more and more shock. So the real experiment was to see whether people would keep turning up and give out this high levels of pain. But the people who were pushing the button didn't know that. They thought it was the other people that were really being observed. So there were lots of people who participated in this and lots of analysis done about this Milgram experiment. But Needleman was writing about what he was really interested in was one particular guy whose name was Mr. Prosy. And Mr. Prosy was unemployed. He came in. He was paid to participate in this experiment. And he sat there, and he was one of the ones who seemed like no matter what happened, he was going to keep giving more and more electric shock. So the guy in the other room, who was just an actor, eventually began screaming in pain, screaming, pleading, crying, whining, begging. And Mr. Prosy just kept pushing the button and kept pushing the button and kept turning up the dial. And after a while, Mr. Prosy began to get distressed. And he said to the one who was running the experiment, the doctor in the long white coat with the clipboard, he said, "That guy's really, he's really suffering in there." And the one running the experiment said, "We assure you that he won't actually have permanent damage. Just keep doing the experiment. Keep doing the experiment." So Mr. Prosy kept doing it, upping the amount of electricity. And finally, Mr. Prosy got really distressed and said, "Who's going to be responsible? I just can't be responsible for this." And the man in the white coat said, "I take full responsibility. Just continue the experiment. Continue the experiment." And Mr. Prosy just kept on and kept on and kept on. Eventually, the actor slumped over and made no more sound. And Mr. Prosy kept saying, "I can't be responsible for this." And the man in the white coat said, "We take full responsibility." And Mr. Prosy just kept on applying the increased level of electronic shock. So Needleman's interest in this experiment, though, is what happens when all of it was over and the actor came in and the researchers sat down with Mr. Prosy and told him what the real experiment was. And the amazing thing is that Mr. Prosy was not horrified. He was not embarrassed. He was not self-conscious about what he had done. He just laughed and said, "Oh, I'm so glad. I was really worried about that guy." We humans are blind to so many things about ourselves. What a gift that we have researchers who study human behavior and help us see the lengths that we'll go to in terms of our denial, our ability to justify things that we do and be literally blind to what we're really like and what we're capable of doing. There are ways in which it's as if we really don't know ourselves. We've probably all had the experience of knowing somebody else. Oftentimes it's a parent or someone who's had a lot of influence, power over us, of being able to see all the things that are wrong with them, that they're blind to. Maybe you know someone who is very, very critical of others, and they seem blind to that fact about themselves or some other quality that they have. And then we have to stop and ask ourselves, so what is it that we do that we're blind to? I believe that Jesus and his early followers were wrestling with those deep, universal human questions about how we can have new vision, deeper sight, deeper insight into our own lives and being the people we want to be instead of the people that we may appear to others when they are critical of ways that we live. In Ephesians chapter 1, the writer who has been praising the people who live in Ephesus, who has been praising their faith, says to them, "I pray that the eyes of your heart may be enlightened." And one scholar wrote that by the second century, baptism was commonly described as enlightenment. Think about that for a few minutes. What if we understood becoming a Christian, or what if we understood our journey of discipleship, our conversion, as enlightenment? Having new vision, having new insight. Have you ever had the experience of suddenly coming to see something that you had been blind to about yourself? Of like, you know, that sudden realization, that sudden insight. It is kind of like revelation or enlightenment. Now, in the letter to the church at Ephesus, the writer is addressing all the saints. And the early Christians referred to each other as the saints. When we hear the term saints, often we think of like some really good Christians, right? But originally the term meant all believers, all those who were trying to follow Jesus. Not people who were perfect or people who were good, but people who understood that we as humans are also often blind to many parts of ourselves, and we need help. We need accountability. We need challenge. We need the Spirit to take the scales off our eyes, to correct our blindness about things that we may think, or our misconceptions, or our ways of living. So today is All Saints Day celebration at Church of the Open Arms. For the ancient people and people through medieval times, people throughout many, many centuries, Christians celebrated All Saints Day, the 1st of November. It was sometimes called All Hallows Day. It's another word for saints. All Saints Day, All Hallows Day. And the night before All Hallows Day was All Hallows Eve, which became Halloween. So every time Halloween rolls around, we can remember that the origin of All Hallows Eve is All Saints Day. All Saints Day was a time for remembering the great cloud of witnesses that surrounds us, and we're each a part of it too, of the communion of saints. So today we're going to have an opportunity to light candles for those who have blessed our lives and who have died in this life, who have gone on before us, who are no longer with us in this life. And I think it's important for us to take time to do this because our culture is often blind to the reality of death and dying. There's a sense in which all the illusions that we weave can be shattered by the reality of death. I was walking in my yard one day, and a magnificent spider web had been woven across an open gateway. I just happened to notice it before I plowed right through it and tore the whole thing to tatters. And I often think of that image when I'm working with a family preparing for a funeral or going through a funeral or a grieving process, that we ourselves weave intricate webs of meaning and effort, the busyness of creating projects and all of our designs. And those things can be shred into tatters by sudden, unexpected death of someone close to us or our own death. And yet, as a culture, we often want to just stick our heads in the sand and pretend as if death does not exist. Just a few generations ago, people usually died at home. And being with someone at the time of dying was something that children grew up around and all of us understood was a part of life. But now we try and get that out of our sight. More and more people die in institutions now, in nursing homes or hospitals. And oftentimes people don't want to look at it, don't want to think about it, don't want to talk about their own death. So let us join together today in a sacred time of opening the eyes of our hearts and opening ourselves to each other in grief and loss, and making visible symbols of that invisible cloud of witnesses that surrounds and sustains us always. We have a series of pictures of members of our church who have passed on from this life. We'll be lighting candles for them. And then, in just a couple of minutes, you, if you wish to, you are invited to come forward. There are some candles on the table that you can pick up to use as a lighter. And you are invited to light a candle for loved ones who have blessed your life and are no longer with us in this life.